and I'm gonna take that word. I'm gonna take that word salvation and put use one of the course's definitions, which is peace or right-mindedness. So it's only God's plan for right-mindedness will work. And I want to just read through it with you first, and then we'll go back and and get the main point. You know, it's 72. So. As you may not realize that your ego has set up a plan for salvation in opposition to God's. It's this plan that the ego has set up that's in opposition to God's in which you believe. Since the ego's plan is the opposite of God's plan, you also believe that to accept God's plan in place of the ego's is to be damned. If any of you, have you been looking at the New Earth thing that Oprah has been doing online with Eckhart? Yeah, they covered the ego last, and it was really good. It's an excellent class, and you can download it anytime. But he was talking about ego, and he says the ego's plan is the opposite of God's. You also believe that to accept God's plan in place of the ego's is to be damned. He says, this sounds preposterous, of course, but yet after we've considered just what the ego's plan is, perhaps you will realize that however preposterous the ego's plan may be, you do believe in the ego's plan. The ego's plan, which is the plan that we've accepted from the world, the learning that we've accepted from the world, the idea of who we are, like he says, the false self that we made up, that we think we are. He said, the ego's plan for salvation, the ego's plan for peace centers around holding grievances. The ego's plan maintains that if someone else spoke or acted differently, or some external circumstance or event were changed, you would be saved. Thus, the source of your peace is constantly perceived as outside yourself. Each grievance you hold is a declaration and an assertion in which you believe that says, if this were different, I'd be saved. If this were different, I'd be peaceful. If this were different, I'd be happy. The change of mind necessary for peace is thus demanded of everyone and everything except yourself. The role assigned to your own mind and the ego's plan, then, is simply for you to determine what other than itself, your mind itself, must change if you are to be saved. According to this insane plan, any perceived source of peace is acceptable, provided that it will not work. This ensures that the fruitless search will continue, for the illusion persists that although this hope has always failed, there are still grounds for hope in other places and in other things. Another person will yet serve better. Another situation will yet offer success. That's the ego's plan for your peace. Another situation will yet offer success. Another person will yet serve better. There's hope for peace in other places and other things. Another person will yet serve better. Another situation will yet offer success. Such is the ego's plan. Another situation will yet offer success. Another person will yet serve better. This is the ego's plan. Another person will yet serve better. Another situation will yet offer success. This is the ego's plan for your salvation. Surely you can see how this is in strict accord with the ego's basic doctrine, seek but do not find. For what could more surely guarantee that you won't find peace than to channel all your efforts in searching for peace or happiness where it isn't? God's plan for your salvation, God's plan for your peace, works simply because by following God's direction, you seek for peace or happiness where it is. But if you are to succeed, as God promises you will succeed, you must be willing to seek according to God's plan only. Otherwise, your purpose is divided and you will attempt to follow two plans for salvation that are diametrically opposed in all ways. When you follow two plans for peace, your plan and God's plan, your ego's plan and God's plan, the result can only bring confusion, misery, and a deep sense of failure and despair. So if you're experiencing confusion, misery, and a deep sense of failure and despair, you're trying to follow two plans. How can you escape all this? Great question. How can you escape all this? Very simply. The idea for today, which is only God's plan for peace will work, is the answer. There can be no real conflict about this because there is no possible alternative to God's plan that will save you. God's plan is the only plan that is certain in its outcome. God's plan is the only plan that must succeed. Let us practice recognizing this certainty today, and let us rejoice that there is an answer to what seems to be a conflict with no resolution possible. All things possible to God. Salvation, which is peace, must be yours because of God's plan, which cannot fail. God's plan cannot fail. God's plan cannot fail. So begin the two longer practice periods for today by doing two things. By thinking about today's idea, only God's plan for my happiness will work, and realizing that God's plan contains two parts, each part making an equal contribution to the whole. God's plan for your peace and happiness will work. That's the first part. Your plan won't. That's the second part. Other plans will not. Don't allow yourself to become depressed or angry because other plans won't work. It's inherent in the first part, which is only God's plan will work. And in the first is your full release from all your own insane attempts and mad proposals to free yourself. Your insane attempts and mad proposals to free yourself have led to depression and anger. But God's plan will succeed. God's plan will lead to release and joy. Remembering that God's plan will lead to release and joy, let us devote the remainder of the extended practice period to asking God to reveal God's plan to us, and ask the Creator very specifically, what would you have me do? Where would you have me go? What would you have me say, and to whom? Then you give your Creator full charge of the rest of the practice period, and let your Creator tell you what needs to be done by you in God's plan for your peace. God will answer in proportion to your willingness to hear God's voice. God will answer in proportion to your willingness to hear God's voice. Refuse not to hear. The very fact that you're doing the exercises proves that you have some willingness to listen. Some willingness to listen is enough to establish your claim to God's answer. Some willingness to listen is enough to establish your claim to God's answer. In the shorter practice periods, tell yourself often that God's plan for your happiness and peace and salvation, and only God's plan will work. Be alert to all temptations to hold grievances today, and respond to your temptation to hold grievances today with this form of today's idea. Holding grievances is the opposite of God's plan for salvation. Holding grievances is the opposite of God's plan for peace, and only God's plan will work. Try to remember, only God's plan for salvation or peace will work. Try to remember that six or seven times an hour. There can be no better way to spend 30 seconds or less, it's too much time, than to remember the source of your peace and to see it where it is. Okay. All right, so the course basically said to us that we don't realize that our ego has set up a plan for our happiness that's in total opposition to God's. A lot of times people say, well, where is God? Is there a God? And the course says, there is, but we're just not listening. We've made up our own ideas about what's going to make us happy and what's going to give us peace. And so, therefore, we're not listening to what our Creator and what our inner guide is telling us. And then he goes on to tell us, well, our plan is simply this. And we all do it in our own way. We all got our own special flavor of the cake that we eat called the grievance cake. Some of us got, you know, different flavors. Doesn't matter what flavor you're eating. Here's the plan. It's not but two in the world. Two. That's it. Two. Two plans. That's it. Two. Two. How many? Two. 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 No, two. Okay. Plan number one is, if something outside of me changed, anything other than my mind changed, then I would have peace and happiness. That's it. I wish it could be more complicated than that, but it's not. That's it. That's it. And the Course says, that ain't God's plan. So everybody in the world is seeking for their happiness outside of themselves, through anything outside of themselves, through anything changing, anybody changing, anything out here changing, they're not following God's guidance. They're not following the guidance of Spirit. And so the Course says, that's that way, and because of that, we need to recognize that there are two parts to God's plan that we have to accept, which is, number one, the plan of God works. Number two, ours doesn't. That's it. You know, and what's hitting me more and more is I've reached another level of awareness around the course. And every time it happens, the pure simplicity of it comes through more and more and more and more and more. And also, I also realize in most cases, even with myself, I'm not talking to you, and you're not talking to me. I'm talking to your egos, and it's my ego talking to you. And that's why most of the time, most of the things from the course just kind of fall dead. Because it's simply, it's not who we think we are. Is not who the course is talking to. And the part of us is programmed by the world, and the part of us that believes that we're separate, that part of us is what we think we are now. It's like Eckhart gave a great example about a baby, and you take a toy away from the baby, and the baby screams simply because in that short period of time, that baby is identified with that toy, and now he somehow thinks that toy enhances his being. And when you take the toy away, then the baby screams and hollers because now he identifies with that toy. That's the same as me identifying with a certain kind of car, me identifying with a certain kind of job, me identifying with a certain looking partner. That's the same thing. And when you take it away, I scream and I cry because I somehow think I've been enhanced by having this thing or this possession. He said it can also be your thoughts, your philosophies, your beliefs, your childhood, your story, all of those things we identify with. And he says, and now that's what we think we are. That's the same thing that the Course is saying. So that's why the Course in Miracles, in my perception, in books like The New Earth and all the Power Now, they only appeal to people who are already waking up. That's why you have to let go of any attachment about getting friends and relatives who are not into this to get into this. They won't. It's just a trip how the truth is the truth is the truth. It's like people look at the course and they go, this looks like gobbledygook. And then he said, well, when people look at the New Earth and they're not awakening, they're going to say, that looks like gobbledygook. Because when I look at the course, it makes complete sense to me. As a matter of fact, it makes more sense than the stuff that people think they understand. So my mind has changed where when I read in the stuff in, that the world teaches is true, that seems like gobbledygook to me. While the course is the one thing that I study that continues to make so much sense to me. So then he turns around, and then the course says, okay, you want God to help you, right, Earl? Yeah, I want God to help me. Well, let me make a point here. A grievance is not, in the sense, what you think another person did to you that you're trying to forgive. A grievance is every time you think something or somebody around you needs to change for you to be happy. That's a grievance. The minute I go, you need to change, I've just established a grievance. And he says, then I go, well, another person will serve better. And another situation will serve better. So now I'm on the hunt. And then I was reading in the course the other day a chapter called The Holy Week. Boy, the course is going to get so deep. I hope my faith in God taking care of me is as strong as I think it is. Because before this year is over, I don't know how many people are going to be in my classes with me. I'm serious, because when you really hear the course, it's extraordinarily threatening to the ego. That's how I can almost tell who really hears the course and who doesn't. Because if you really hear the course, your ego is going to react. Mm-hmm. If you don't hear the course, your ego doesn't react at all. And so you can tell when you're hearing it, because when you hear it, you're going to get a reaction. Like the section I was reading the other day when it was saying that in most cases, people are in their fearful ego mind that doesn't really love. And so most people don't really, paraphrasing, most people don't really love their body. They don't really feel peace about their body. They really don't like their body. And so they try to make, he says, we try to make something seem lovely that we hate. So I don't really like it, but I'm going to see if I can dress it up, fix it up. You know, it's something that, to the ego. Now, and the truth is, everybody's ego is like that. It's not like my ego isn't like that. No, your ego doesn't like your body. Okay. You may think you're okay with your body, but your ego doesn't like your body. The ego is the part of the mind that does not love. So it can't love anything because it doesn't love. Okay, hold on a second. It doesn't love anything. And you have to accept that there is a part of your mind that is fear based, and until a person really is really clear about that, then they can't dissolve it, because dissolving it has to do with breaking your connection with it, and breaking your connection with it has to do with being able to look at it. So if I can't separate myself from it, over to look at it, in order to look at it, I can't dissipate it. So if I'm busy denying that I have it, then how can I make it disappear? So one of the biggest breakthroughs in consciousness is when you get off of the positive thinking kick and go, I'm going to tell myself the truth about what's really going on inside of my mind. One part of my mind is fear-based. It's not true. It's not me. It's not real. And the other part of my mind is the presence, is God, is consciousness, is spirit, is truth. And the part of me that's looking at the ego and calling it the ego, that's the part of me that's presence. The part of me that's God is the part of me can look back and say, Earl, that was a stupid thing you did yesterday, but you're still innocent. But I had to get outside of that thought system to look back at it. And it's the looking at it, which is the no longer the investment in it, that allows it to dissipate. It's not positive thinking that allows your ego to dissipate. It's looking at your ego and knowing it's your ego that allows it to dissipate. Okay? So it's important to go. That's why this lesson to me is so powerful, because it says every time you go, my happiness is in another person, my happiness is in another place, my happiness is in another thing, which there is a part of my mind, I don't know about you all, but there's a part of my mind that runs that down to me practically every moment of the day. That voice is always telling me whether this was a better tasting cup of coffee, if this was a warmer day, if my, you know what I'm saying? It's like I realize I use the ego's plan consciously and unconsciously 99% of, if I got the course and the truth, I would be a better person. Spiritual ego. Okay, spiritual ego is just as much a part of the ego as regular worldly ego. And when you start studying truth stuff, you get into spiritual ego, which is condemning yourself and judging yourself for not being more loving, not being more kind, not being more awake. So he says right here, well, that's the ego's rule, which is seek, don't find it. Look for it, don't find it. Want it, never get it. That's the ego's rule, right? So he says, what could more guarantee that you'll never have happiness than to always look for it where it isn't? You know, if I'm looking for this recorder in the kitchen, I ain't going to find it. I don't care how smart I am. I don't care how cute I am. I don't care how much I smile. I don't care how positive I am. The recorder isn't in the kitchen. So no matter how much I put effort in looking in the kitchen, I'm not going to find it. So it doesn't mean the recorder doesn't exist, does it? It just means I'm looking in the wrong place for it. So that's what he said. The love and the peace and the joy that we all want, it exists. We keep looking in the wrong place for it, which is?
Outside.
Okay, all right. So then he says, if you are to succeed, which I'm sick of failing, right? If you are to succeed, there's one thing you must do. You must be willing to look where God tells you to look forward. Okay? And I'm going to hit the other part of that. What are you getting ready to ask?
When people are looking for a mate or a relationship.
Mm-hmm. That's the ego's plan.
I've seen friends who are, you know, doing the master home thing. And it's like, okay, he's got to be at least 6 foot because I don't like to work him.
Right.
And he's got to be this and he's got to be that. And
right.
And I'm going, why would the physical have anything to do with the person that you're going to fall in love with? I mean, I don't understand that, really.
Well, think about it a minute. You were hypnotized and mesmerized and programmed through TV and movies and friends and society and your culture. We're being bombarded on TV and radio and movies. We are being constantly told this is what's beautiful. This is what happiness is. This is what will give us joy. That's what the ego is. The ego is the pain.
That is going into the ego.
Okay. That, yeah, it's not like ego is going into the ego, and it is. Mm-hmm. But also, that is the ego. See, it gets to the point that every time I go, but the trick is not to feel guilty about it, because if you make yourself feel guilty about it, guess what? That is the ego.
Okay?
That's what you must never forget. That when you feel bad about something, that's as much your ego as the thing you feel bad about. So it's still another trick. It's still another trick. In fact, the Course says, if you feel any kind of guilt for any reason at all, you're in your ego. And then the ego says, well, if you don't feel guilty, you must be some kind of a cold-hearted person. Because a good person feels guilty about, but why? Because the separate identity, the Course says the ego only needs guilt. The separated self thrives off of guilt and punishment and fear. So it's a trip to get to the point where I'm getting within myself, where I see the game that my ego is playing not with me. I'm seeing the game my ego is playing with my ego. And I just think my ego is saying, my ego tells itself to do something, and then my ego beats my ego up for what it told itself to do. It's because I, the Holy Son of God, I, presence, I, love, would never condemn myself. Period. So the whole game, now it's like the part of you that told you to take the drink that you swore you wouldn't take is the same part of you that punishes you for taking the drink. Mm-hmm. It's the exact same part of the mind. The part of you that tells you to get mad is the part of you that condemns you for getting mad, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're in it, you identify with it just like the child identifies with the toy. And I don't know about you, but I can get lost in my illusion.
You bet.
If I identify with it a lot, and I got a lot of, like the Course says, it's special to me. See, the more special it is, the easier it is to fall asleep in it. That's what everybody's looking for specialness, but it's also what's most special to you is what you will use to put yourself to sleep the most. Because you don't tend to get that upset about things that don't mean anything to you. You tend to get upset about the things that you want, that you think is going to make you happy. So the minute I go, I'm having a lot of peace right now. I'm having a lot of centeredness. There's no one, like right now, I'm not in a special relationship and haven't been in a while. What I've experienced is an enormous amount of peace. Okay, because there's, I don't care what I do, where I go, who I'm with, how long I stay, what I say, there absolutely is no one that gives a damn. Okay? I'm not special. But the people who really appreciate me are still very loving, still very kind, said, come over to dinner, let's go out to a movie. All the stuff that I would experience in a specialness, you know what I'm saying? But since I'm not special, nobody's attached. You can come over, but if you don't, it's okay. We can go dancing, but if we don't, it's okay. You know what I'm saying? And then your ego said, well, you're not going to have physical intimacy because it's through specialness that you have physical intimacy. Well, that ain't true either. Okay? That ain't true either. There are people who can be intimate with you and loving toward you and still not have you so special that they're freaking out about what you do. But you usually can't do that with a person more than 3 times. There's a 3-time rule with that. Yeah, three, you might get away with it 3 times. But if you do it 10 times, you will. You know you are because the emotional connection and attachment starts to happen with physical intimacy if you do it. That's in my book. Yeah, that's in my book. That's the one I'm writing. Okay.
But then I may only be able to take 2, so it only works.
But that's when you get into the content of what I'm saying more so than the form. Yeah, that there's a certain amount of attachment that happens with physical intimacy if you keep doing it over. Because why? Because you, in most cases, you're feeding your ego. Now this little section of the book that I was talking about that I was reading is called The Holy Week. If you read that chapter 20, it's a monster. And it was talking about how that, okay, so since I don't really love, since I don't really love my body, I don't really like my separate identity from an ego perspective, then I interpret its value based on how much somebody else wants it. And you see, it's in the course, but people don't even see it because you don't see it until you get to a certain point. So he was saying what you're then doing is you're using your body to in a sense, validate you. How much somebody like it, how much somebody is attracted to it. And when I say body, I'm not just talking about your physical body. I'm talking about whatever it is you value in the ego. You know what I'm saying? Whatever it is you think is your specialness. Whatever that might be, okay? But he was talking about specifically the physical body. And so what happens is that when someone doesn't show an interest in you in an intimate physical way, it begins to shake the foundation of your ego's temple, because your ego builds itself up through the specialness that it attracts through somebody being attracted to you and wanting your body and wanting to be close to you in a physical way. That's why when you're out of a relationship a lot of times and you're not getting any kind of physical attention, your ego longs to get into one in order to validate you again, because you're not getting validation about your value. And sometimes I watch myself doing that, not being in one. I find myself, it's like almost like a drug trip or something. If you're withdrawing, all of a sudden it's like, oh God, I feel my specialness. I need my specialness fixed. You know, I can feel. Then what I've learned to do is dive into the course. Like literally dive into the course, because I know what that's going to do is trigger me to try to go out and get a body or get some kind of a specialness from somebody. And I know that if it's a holy relationship, there's no such thing as me having a need that's not met. But if it's a holy relationship that's going to meet that need, there's no need to get. It's given. It's offered. And it's offered freely, and it's offered without attack, and it's offered without possession, and it's offered without guilt. So now I'm awake enough to know that, yeah, I can have any need met. But now I have to be discerning enough to go, this is my ego feeling this drive to get. If I go out and try to make this happen, I'm getting ready to reinforce my ego again. If I can recognize my peace isn't coming from outside of myself, then I'm in a position to just attract to me what it is I deserve to have, and I'm okay if it happens, and okay if it doesn't. So I have to constantly not give in to the temptation of going, Earl, if you just had somebody, then you would be happy. Because your ego does miss the specialness. Your ego does miss somebody actually acting like they really care about you, and they're really concerned about you. You know what I'm saying? Now when I get a cold, and I get a severe cold or whatever I got, and I'm in the house and nobody to say, let me run to the store and get you a cup of soup. You know, even though people would, if I was to call and say, hey brother, I'm sick. You know, you probably do it. You know what I mean? But the specialness is like built in kind of thing. You know, where they just right there kind of thing. So it's really interesting as I read the course now, I'm seeing it completely different, because I'm more in my right-mindedness than I'm in my ego-mindedness now. So so I realize just what he's saying here, that the reason why we're not happy is because, he says, our purpose is divided. And he says, that's why you go through confusion and misery and pain. It's like, I'm not going through confusion, misery, and pain because this person is not doing me right. I'm really going through confusion, misery, and pain because I'm trying to follow two plans of happiness at the same time. One plan is God's plan, which we're going to get into what that is in just a second, and the ego's plan, which is my plan, the things that I've made up that I think is going to make me happy. I want to take a minute to throw it open for discussion or comment.
Sounds like you have a constant. There's something constant going on, and I think about a reflection.
Mm-hmm.
Ego is always, always placing a judgment or an opinion.
Always.
So it sounds like there's a fine line. I mean, from being aware of that and concentrating on it.
Right. That's right. That's it.
So.
That's it. And the course says that all problems are identity problems, because if I knew who I was, then my ego wouldn't have any power over me. If I don't know who I am, then my ego can hypnotize me. You know what I'm saying? It's like for instance, if I know, so let's just take it down a level. If I know I'm a human being named Earl, then I don't care how much you talk to me as if I'm a zebra. I don't care how much you ask me to do zebra stuff. I'm not going to get fooled by it, because I know I'm Earl Purdy. But if I don't know who I am, you might be able to convince me I am a zebra. and then I'll be trying to stretch my neck and kill myself. You see what I'm saying? Because I'm trying to be something I'm not, which would cause me pain. Or like, you know, like everybody's heard that story of the chicken and the eagle.
Yeah.
And the, you know, which I think is a great little story. I can give you the 1 minute version of it. There was an eagle with a bunch of chickens, brought up with chickens, thought it was a chicken. Right? But of course it had some problems. But the minute it remembered it was an eagle, then it flew away. You know what I'm saying? It's like that's what the Course is saying. That's what it means to me when it's always saying stuff like, you can be healed in an instant. You can be happy in an instant. You can be peaceful in an instant. It's like a person has amnesia. The minute they remember who they are, all their memories come back. They know how to play music again. If they play music, they know how to drive a car. They didn't have to go to school to learn how to drive after they remembered they knew how to drive. You see what I'm saying? So that's what the Course is telling us. That the minute we remember who we are, then all, he says, we can our world will change in an instant because it's just amnesia. It's not about being positive. It's about remembering. And so when people study the Course from the perspective of it's trying to remind me of who I am rather than let me figure out what the Course is saying, okay? And then they're battling with it all the time, then if it doesn't mean anything, then you're still asleep relative to the Course. Because if you're awaking relative to the Course, you realize what he's saying. My plan hasn't worked. It hasn't worked because it evidently is not the plan. I want the plan, okay? And then you say, I want the plan. Then the Spirit said, well, I'll tell you. It's very simple. You need it very simple, Earl. I'm going to tell you very simple. Your plan is, if everything outside of you and everybody changes and everything around you changes, you'd be happy. It won't work. My plan is for you to say to yourself, God's plan will work. Other plans won't. My plan won't work. My plan of changing you for me to be happy won't work. My plan thinking I'm going to find the ideal person that's going to complete me won't work. My plan of thinking if I had $1 million a year, I'm going to be happy won't work. My plan of thinking if I lost 30 pounds, I'd be more desirable and therefore I could get somebody to really love me won't work. It says in the Course that you can always tell when the ego has ask you to do something because whenever you achieve anything your ego tells you to do, you're not completely satisfied. And when I first heard that, I immediately realized one thing. All of my desires had all come from my ego because there's never been one single thing I've ever had in my life that completely satisfied me to the point that I was in complete peace and not looking for something else. I don't know anybody else either that's not that way. I don't know anybody that's not seeking to change themselves or something about them in some way. Nobody. Not the people on the spiritual path, not the people not on the spiritual path. I personally don't know anyone that's completely fulfilled in their experience the way that it is that's not seeking to make, change, or do. Do you?
No, but why get out of bed in the morning?
The reason,
seriously, because there's moments when I'm really satisfied and I know it's okay.
Well, a moment of true satisfaction never changes. So that's how the Course got my ego. It says, no, Earl. True satisfaction doesn't change. You can't have true satisfaction at 8 o'clock and then at 8:30 you're back dissatisfied again. True satisfaction, and I'm just talking according to the truth. True satisfaction has one characteristic. It doesn't change except to expand and grow. It doesn't go, I'm satisfied at 8:30, not satisfied at 9, back satisfied at 10, not satisfied at 2. True satisfaction goes like this. Forever.
So that's just ego saying I'm satisfied.
There you go. When you were having the ego satisfaction of the cake. I was having the ego satisfaction of looking at the sunset and feeling like it was a beautiful sunset for a minute there. Because why? Because my happiness was dependent on the beautiful sunset I was looking at. And the ego, that's what I'm saying. When you hear stuff like this, if y'all are really hearing it, your ego probably doesn't like it. Because the ego wants to believe, I have actually loved someone. Mm-hmm. I have actually felt satisfaction. I actually with someone right now that I'm feeling complete love with. You know what I'm saying? The ego can't deal with that level of honesty. That if I was really loving you, I mean really loving you, guess what would happen? I'd be really loving you, and you, and you, and this, and that, and you, and you know, it would be complete. It would be equal. But if I just love you, it's ego love. Now, what can I do? He says, well, what you do with ego love is you flip it and you go, well, I'm going to practice the characteristics that I've learned true love is, which is freedom without attack, right? Supporting you in who you are, nurturing who you are. I'm going to take all the characteristics that I'm learning and I'm going to apply it to you first. And then he says, then it will start to extend. But you start with the people who are most special to you. Why? Because those are the people you're going to give most of your attention to. Anyway, you're not going to give your attention mostly to the people that's not special to you. So it's really the people you start with are the people that you're already in some type of a special connection with. So therefore, I would start with my child, and I would start with my husband, and I would start with my boyfriend, and I would start with my girlfriend. You see what I mean? So that way the ego, that way you keep your ego from freaking out, because you start where you can do it. And where you can do it is where you already have that kind of attention focus, where you even pretending that you're really loving the person. So I'm going to start with the people that I pretend I love first, basically. I'm going to start with the pretend lovers, and then I'm going to make them, through the Holy Spirit, I'm going to allow them to become real lovers. And then we'll extend that love out to appreciate others. Does that make sense to everybody? You know, it's like, because you can't start out loving everybody. I don't believe it when the people say they love everybody. When somebody says, some things now, after studying this after years, I go, that's a nice thought. I don't more believe it, but that's a really nice thing to say. Why? Because you made an exception. You left somebody out. And the course talks about the no exception rule. You leave somebody out, it's not real. So if you really love me, and I'm the only one you really love, you don't really love me. And I need to stay. I can't tell you in all my years on the planet how many different relationships I've had with people who told me they really love me and they would never leave me. And most of them don't even speak to me now, depending on how special they were. And matter of fact, the more special they were, the less likely they are to speak to me now or spend time with me now. So I always ask myself when I meet somebody and I feel, especially if it's a physical attraction or intimate attraction, I ask myself, am I willing to sacrifice the reality of this relationship in order to have this physical or this intimate special relationship? Because I know what's happened a lot in my special relationships. The ones that were most passionate also were the ones that had the worst ending. And the most so right now we got the option of me and you being friends and not being really physically intimate. And those people I've noticed my relationships have lasted longer with. Or I could get really intimate and physical with you and take the chance that 6 months from now we'll be avoiding each other in King Super. Now, if the attraction is strong enough, I go for the attraction. Especially if the other person seems to be mutually needing the validation that I can give them. Then we see a relationship made in heaven. You know, do you need me for validation? Yeah, baby, I want to give you validation too. Oh, well, we got to go. We in love. We got to hook up. You know what I'm saying? That's what we call the hook up. Now, you know, we can both validate each other. So not being in your ego would be, I know that we're trying to validate each other. I know this is the ego's plan. I know that this isn't real. I would like it to be real. And so I'm going to go into this very conscious. Yeah. You see what I mean? It's not saying I wouldn't still do it. It's saying I would just be honest with myself and just be totally conscious that it's a good possibility that this could be specialness of the ego. And so we might make it and we might not. Because I'm singling you out and you're singling me out. It has a much better possibility of lasting if we're consciously engaged. That way when our egos do come up, we can be above our own ego and still choose. Like I have a what I consider to be an extremely holy, real relationship with a woman that's lasted for 30 years. And we've loved each other unconditionally for 30 years, no matter what each other did. With our bodies, without our bodies, no matter what, we've always loved each other. And but the relationship started in the course. I mean, the course was the foundation of the relationship. And what I've seen is all the people who've done it the way that the world says do it, 90% of the people in the couples that we've known, they're not together right now. But everybody we know that's trying to do God's plan, which is, you know, let me go to God. I'm not looking for you to complete me. I'm here to support your innocence, help you recognize who you are. I'm not going to be in denial about if something comes up for me or that if I feel fear. It wasn't like we were in denial. But our desire to recognize the truth in each other and practice the truth with each other would mean more to us than to do the traditional idea of special relationship. And so I feel a level of safety and a level of reality in that relationship that I've never felt in a special relationship, because every special relationship I have ever had, the person had a condition on me that I had to meet. And if I didn't meet it, they were going to withdraw their love from me and their attention from me. So they always love me, love me, love me, love me, as long as I didn't do that.
Right.
Whatever that is. And everybody's got their own that. So therefore, I know the difference between a real relationship and an unreal relationship. So now if I choose to have an unreal relationship, I can enjoy it because I know it's not real. Which is not sacrifice. So there's some people we go, well, you know this is specialness, and I know this is specialness, and you know this is not real love yet, right? Yeah, but we still have this really strong connection, and we have this opportunity to learn together and be together, right? Yeah, let's go for it. Let's enjoy it as long as we possibly can. And who knows if they transform into a holy relationship, and it could last forever. But let's not enter it with pretending like it's what it's not. And that's what romantic love is. It's pretending that you don't know what it is. Okay, you know, let's pretend that, you know, so everybody's out looking for romantic love instead of looking for eternal love. And so I would rather be with somebody that I knew was going to be there for who I really was, which I'm experiencing, than have. And so a lot of times what would happen, I'm sharing personal stuff because I've had a lot of learning in these 30 years working with the Course. And so one of the main challenges that I've had sometimes in relationships was if the person did not understand agape, did not understand that we're one, did not understand that love and sex are not the same thing, did not understand that recognizing that you have an eternal relationship with somebody who only recognizes your innocence, that is the most important kind of relationship you can ever have, then they're not going to ask you to give that relationship up in order to be in a relationship with them. But that's the way the world does it. If you're a man, you can't have a female friend. If you're a woman, you can't have male friends. I have to be your everything now. I'm supposed to be your only experience of maleness now forever because we're in a special love relationship. See what I'm saying? So,
keep the same couch forever.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. So a lot of times, if people don't feel like they can have you to themselves to the extent that there is nobody else that you extend to it anyway, they won't be in a special relationship with you at all. They'd rather have a relationship that's conditional if they can possess you than to have a relationship that will always be there forever if they can't possess you. And that's one of the most interesting things that I've seen in my lessons around relationships. I'm offering you complete freedom, complete support, who you are, not going to attack you for being who you are. I'm going to love you no matter what you do, even what you do with your body, I'm going to love you, but you don't want to be with me because you can't control me. So I'd rather have an unreal relationship that I've got the illusion of controlling a person than a real relationship, which is one I would never be attacked in and could never lose in. So again, when you wake up, you see the difference between the two relationships, and you don't care how cute the person is, you don't care how fine the person is, and you don't care how much money the person got. When you wake up, you're not going to be tempted to make that your primary relationship, because nothing will be more important to you than your freedom. Nothing will be more important to you than you being able to be your authentic self. And so the Course describes the way we do special relationships as idols. They're idols. They're things that we put before the truth that means more important to us than the truth. If they can give us the external validation that we don't feel because we're not in touch with our own power. and we're not in touch with our own center. And so you don't condemn anybody for being like that, because we all learn that. And they're not going to always be that way, because we're all destined to wake up. That's one good thing about this game. There are no losers in this game, right? But you just have to be conscious enough not to delay yourself. You know, it's like, okay, it's okay if you want to do it that way. That's great. You're going to learn some really cool lessons. But I've got to be conscious enough to go, you know what? I've done that dance many lifetimes. I've done that dance many times, and it's okay. You know what I mean? It's okay for you to do that dance, because sometimes people still like to do dances that I don't like to do. Some people I know still like to do the twist. You know what I'm saying? But I'm not doing the twist right now. You know what I mean? So would I condemn them from doing the twist? No. I would just go, well, I'm not twisting right now. And that's where I look at people in the world most of the time now, and all the games that we play now. It's like, okay, that's cool. You want to play that game? You're totally innocent. But I'm not playing that game. And so it'll look like in the world that you don't have a lot of choices to connect with, because it looks like at the worldly level, everybody's into the other game. Right?
Yeah.
But the reason why it looks like it's not other people that you can play the new game with is because you are not playing the new game yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's only when you play the new game yourself that you attract the people that play the game with you. So all of a sudden it's like, you know, it's like, especially the last 2 or 3 months, I've been like amazed at how many people I've been drawn to me who are playing the new game or wanting to play the new game. They either playing the new game, or they're sincerely wanting to play. And either one of those are cool.
Mm-hmm.
The people who still kind of know they got the old game, but they really want the new game,
mm-hmm.
they're cool. And the people who know they want the new game, they're cool. But what I'm shying away from at an intimate level are those who are also innocent, but they want to try the old game one more time. And that's all right. That's okay. And some of you all probably know that. And there are some areas that I still want to play the old game one more time. Maybe I don't want to play the old game financially, but I want to play the old game in a relationship. Or I don't want to play it in a relationship financially, but I still got my career is going to do it. If I can just be a really successful course teacher, then I'm going to really, you know what I mean? It's like you have to kind of like stalk yourself and ask yourself, where am I still doing the ego's game? And maybe some areas where I'm not, but there's some areas where I am. And then he says right at the end, what do you do? What's God's plan? It's for you to do what? Say, where would you have me go? You know, and I do that. So God, what do you mean? That's how I ended up in Denver. That's a classic example. I was using the ego's plan. I was no longer happy, wasn't satisfied. And I go, where do you want me to go? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to say? Who do you want me to say it to? And all of a sudden, Denver, 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 everything started moving me toward Denver. The whole reality started moving toward you're supposed to be in Denver. You know, and he said that you only hear God's voice in proportion to your willingness to listen to it. Like people say, well, I never hear Spirit's voice. Well, you're not willing to listen, because Spirit doesn't communicate like the ego, right? So what do I need to learn? How the ego communicates. Because if I know how the ego communicates, I know when I'm listening to the ego and not God, and that's what the course is for. He says, my only purpose is to teach you how to tell truth from illusion. So you know when you're listening to the fear-based thought system, even if the other person doesn't have any awareness of that, that doesn't matter to the other person, you know. Right? And when you're listening to the truth thought system. You know? And so he says, then you'll be able to hear God's voice, because you know God's voice has one characteristic. It's gentle, it reminds, and it doesn't frighten you. And when you're listening to it correctly, you feel more peace. So if I'm listening to a voice, I don't even care if it's quoting the course, and I'm getting more and more terrified, it's my ego quoting the course. Because my ego knows it can scare itself through the course. A lot of people's egos bring them to my class to scare the hell out of them. And you see it where they're sitting out there. You can see it in their face. They're just up there resisting. They're hating what they're hearing. They feel threatened by every word that's come out of their mouth. Their ego loves it. But their ego hates the truth, but their real self is also there. And their real self is like going, right on. You know, their real self is going, you're saving my life. Thank you for reminding me. The ego's like, what about this? And you're going to tell me? What about the starving children? You're going to tell me? You see, I don't even, that, like now it's like, I don't even think that's the person anymore like I used to. And that's really cool because now they can do their ego thing and I don't get all caught up in it. It's like, well, that ain't you anyway. Because no sane person would be arguing with a person that's saying to them, you deserve love. You deserve eternal peace. You are very powerful. You are not alone. And you mad at me? That couldn't possibly be your sane mind.
Right on.
You know what I mean? So I know who I'm talking to by how they're reacting to me. Nobody sane would be mad at me for saying they deserve love.
That happened to me this morning. My daughter's been involved with this a really handsome dude at college. But he's a drug addict and an alcoholic.
But he's cute, though.
Yeah, he's
cute.
Yeah.
He said,
we can
make some allowance.
Yeah, right. She has a break in between. They do a block time. She gets 4 days off at the end of 3.5 weeks.
Uh-huh.
So she drove home last night and I take care of some business. I come home and she's crying at the dining room table. My wife's there listening. And it was after dinner. And then I'm doing some note taking for stuff I'm doing in Denver today. She's crying. I go to bed. My wife comes in later. 12:30. I get up and do my chores this morning. And I talk. My daughter's there. She finally wakes up as I'm getting ready to leave. And I go up to her, and I was thinking about it during my meditative walks. You know what I'm doing? So, see, being a parent, that's a big ego trip, man. The ego can trick you through your parenthood.
My ego lives in my relationship with my children.
Okay,
that's where my ego lives.
So I get back and I'm ready to go, and I look at her, give her a hug, and I said, you know, with all you're going through, have you ever thought about 12-step program? Alma, I said.
Yeah.
No. And I mean, it was no. Like, and I said, that's not my daughter right there.
There you go.
I said, that's not my daughter. I said, well, you know, it's for people who've been affected by somebody else's addiction or alcoholism. And it really helped Dad. Really helped your mom. Helped your cousin Phil.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went over and I was packing up. And I said, you know, and it'll be there if you think you ever need it. And then I packed up the car, came in, and I said, God, I love you. I gave her a hug, kissed her on the forehead, and she gave me a big hug. Because in that moment going out the car, I said, you know, I leave you free to be yourself.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You were in the present with her.
But it was for that second.
Yeah.
She reacted.
Yeah.
You know, the old dad.
Yeah.
I've run 2005. You know what I mean?
Hey.
It was like,
special is that relationship? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You don't have a relationship that's more special sometimes than a relationship you have with your children. That thing about literally thinking something is a part of you and an extension of you.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, parenthood, it's like, that's a whole nother level of opportunity.
Yeah, you're real.
Really, because even a mate, you can divorce.
Right.
Or you can separate from. But a child is an entirely different. Even somebody you have a child with, that's also like guaranteeing at some point of time, y'all's path are going to always intersect for the rest of that child's life.
No.
You know, I know. Not that much, but you know what I'm saying. But it does come up, and so that's why it's got to be a great opportunity. So don't take anything I'm saying as negative. It's just saying that the Course is always saying, let's look at it from the ego perspective and get that clear, and then let's look at it from spirit perspective and get that clear. So I'm not anti-special relationships. You just hear me calling them holy relationships. I'm using a different terminology. Because I still can get kissed by the person that thinks I'm cool. And I can be made love to by the person who really thinks I'm innocent. And I can go to the movie with the person who thinks I'm innocent. I can take a trip. So you don't sacrifice anything in a holy relationship that you don't get in a special relationship. You just get all the good things of a special relationship without all the drama and all the attack. And you get a chance to wake up at the same time. There is no sacrifice. But the ego will tell you, well, if you dive into a special relationship, then you're just going to have this cool, detached, aloof existence that there's not. You're going to be by yourself. And, you know, it tells you you're not going to have companionship. No, you'll have companionship because he says in the book, everybody's been assigned a savior. that all of us have been assigned a person, a being that is here for the explicit purpose of helping us wake up in love. And I think that's such a beautiful thought. You know, people talk about soulmates and all that kind of stuff, but the Course literally says that, you know, that in time all of us have been assigned people whose purpose is to help us recognize our innocence, and we are there to help them recognize theirs. And to be with somebody that recognizes that is an incredibly beautiful relationship, and it can happen with the person that you started out in specialness with, if that's something that they want to join in also. But if they don't, then you are perfectly innocent to choose to move into a relationship that is the case, unless you're so guilty that you can't let yourself have the peace that you want. I've met some people that are so guilty that they can't release. They feel so guilty, they can't let it go. So they just stay with it, even though it's not bringing them any peace. So I'm going to do the love offering, and I can answer you quick while we're doing it, because I want y'all to get out of time. It's 1 o'clock. It's 1 after 1. So if you want to do the AMT that I'm doing on the 29th from 10 to 3, where I'm going to go into it deeper than we've ever gone before, because each time we do it, we're deeper than we were before, then so you can sign up for it over here. I'm not pushing it hard, because I just want people to come who that's what they want to do. You know what I'm saying? You know, and if whoever want to come, I don't have to talk them into it.
It's a powerful day, I'll say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm always different, and you're always different. See, that's the thing about it. There's no such thing as like, oh, I did that last year. Well, I'm not the same person I was. I'm not the same person I was last year. You're not the same person you were last year. So how the heck is it going to be the same AMT you did before? Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as that. You know, you all are constantly evolving and changing and awakening. And one of the best things that he said on that New Earth thing to me was, and it took so much pressure off me when he said, if you're not awakening, it will be meaningless to you. Mm-hmm. That way you don't have to go through all of that frustration of trying to get somebody to get it or get somebody to understand it. Mm-hmm. You know, I did a session for an 11-year-old girl 2 weeks ago that blew me out of the water. This young girl talked to me at the same level that you and I are talking. She wanted to have the session as a birthday present from her. She wanted a soul purpose reading for her birthday present. She told me she was there because she wanted to know what her mission was. And I asked her, well, what is your perspective of God? She said, well, I believe God is in everything and everyone is the universe, and we attract into us what we are creating to ourselves because of who we are and what we believe about ourselves. And so she was asking me how to deal with her classmates and how to bring that love into her. I mean, I'm like going, you know, she was quoting Eric Butterworth. I'm like, and that's what I'm telling you. And I have a lot of friends who are a lot younger than me, as well as friends who are my age and friends who are older than me. And what I'm noticing is that the ones that are awakening, really awakening, the age of their body has nothing to do with so much what their purpose is. They got to have more life experience for sure. But I'm finding that they all want honesty, and they really want you to be straight with them. And that's what sometimes, as quote-unquote adults, we don't do with them. We still kind of run that same game on them that our parents ran down on us. And we don't realize these jokers coming in now got to save the planet and the dream with us. They're dealing with stuff we never had to deal with. And we're at a point in history where we can decide to either destroy the human race and come back and incarnate again, if we want to do that, or we can change everything now. So they don't really have time to deal with the stuff at that slow, unaware level that most parents still try to deal with their children.
It's like Tully's answer when that woman asked him, did you mean it literally?
Yeah.
Either make to die, and he didn't want to say, well, yes. Mm-hmm.
And
I said, well, it doesn't matter because we live on.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be a yes.
That would be a yes, what I thought, too. I said, well, very subtly, he's trying to tell you yes, if we don't get our act together. You know, because it's funny. It's like we see, quote unquote, species, right? That's the way you pronounce it, right? Mm-hmm. Who seem to be extinct, mm-hmm. right? But our specialness tells us that couldn't happen to us. Mm-hmm. You know, we're humans, though. It could happen to that certain kind of turtle.
Yeah.
But it couldn't happen to us, and that's how your specialness fools you, is it always tells you you're the exception. And I've always told people, we are not going to destroy the earth. If we were to drop 100 nuclear bombs, we wouldn't destroy the earth. And in 300 million years, there'd be radioactive creatures who lived off of radioactivity. The earth would go on. We wouldn't, in the form we are. So we don't have to worry about destroying the earth. You know, because the earth might get tired of us. It's like we get tired of viruses and germs, and we try to get rid of them. I feel like that's the way we are. In that movie, The Matrix, I don't know if you ever saw that movie, The Matrix, but there was a point that one of the characters in there compared the human race to viruses, that we just go into an area like a virus does, and we consume everything until it's gone, and then we move on. And I went, you know, that's right. Without any use, and then there's no useful purpose in it. It's like there's nothing that we do that makes the planet better, per se, until we get conscious. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can look at all the rest of the creatures and it look like what they're doing is like keeping the ecosystem going and keeping it balanced. But where do humans do that? We don't. We just consume. It's like a cancer. It just consumes. So at some point, the earth might react to us.
And we don't want to hear anything.
Yeah, just like we react to a cancer or a virus on our body. Like, okay, we through with you. It's going to be some earthquakes and some floods, and we're going to get rid of y'all. Because you all really think it's just about them all. And that's all it's about. You know, you polluting me, and you poisoning me, and you don't even identify with me anymore. It's almost like nature isn't even what you're a part of anymore.
Well,
and that's deep.
You know, but it starts in our body. So I hear from the Course perspective, it's dealing with our thought, and then the ego and the split mind. But then we also have pollution that we are doing to our own body.
That's right.
Check out our colon.
It's the same thing.
Headaches, that is really doing damage to the planet.
That's right.
And until we get aligned with inside here, the external world isn't gonna make a difference yet, because we haven't lined it up inside our own body.
And that's why the Course says that your only responsibility is to accept the truth for yourself, to start with you, and then it will. Then it'll naturally extend out. Yeah,
right.
Exactly right. Exactly.
Trees.
Exactly right.
Fruit trees.
That's right. Instead of just fruit.
Right.
So I'll see you all the next time I see you.